If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Right about now, we're going to bring up a friend of ours who's going to sit in with us. Mr. Andreas Nobeas. I wish I could play the electric guitar. Singers of a sixpence, bada bada rhyme. I wish it was more than crumbs I could burn. Thank you. seen a man in it all. I seen a man in it all. I seen a man in it all.
You've been listening to Mulling It Over from Blues Traveler from a November 15th, 2010 performance at the Brooklyn Bowl. The jam band community owes a debt of gratitude to these guys who, in many ways, pioneered the neo-jam band scene back in the late 80s and early 90s. In fact, they supported the post-Garcia jam band scene by putting on the Horde Festival, which is the precursor in many ways to Lock-In or even Bonnaroo. I've always been a fan of the band and fondly remember listening to them lots and going to see them as well. But it's been a while since I had, and they came through Toronto recently after a long hiatus and wanted to catch up. Chan Kinchla, the founding guitarist, made some time, which was a thrill for sure. Mostly for me, I think. Our conversation started when I reminded Chan of his Canadian heritage since he was born in Hamilton, a stone's throw from Toronto.
My father was teaching at McMaster when I was born, and I'm actually still on record as the heaviest baby born at the Hamilton, Ontario Hospital, 11.1 pounds. I never stopped from that point on, but I only lived here for 3 months, and then my dad got the gig at Princeton, and so we moved to the States, and I was 3 months old. So it was a glorious time in Canada, but first 3 months... I was partying pretty hard, so I don't have a lot of memories.
Yes, I get it. Yeah, it's funny. That's really funny because I was born in Montreal, but I moved to Toronto when I was 3 months old. And like you, I had no say in the matter. I would have stayed in Montreal.
Montreal's very cool, though. My son actually goes to school in Vancouver. He's a Canadian citizen, and he loves Vancouver, though he did get into McGill. But one of the considerations, other than the psych department was better at UBC, was the cold. Because from what I gather, Montreal, and I have experienced, is bitterly cold in the winter.
It's true. It's very cold. People have been wondering in this area, what's taking you guys so long to get back?
As we were discussing a little bit before, I am shocked it's taken us that long. I think... We've gone up to Vancouver a bunch, which
right.
I know is another planet.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Right.
And we've played a few festivals semi near here.
Yes.
In Canada.
Yeah.
But it's been 20 years since we played Toronto proper.
I think so. Yeah. I think
if
that's what
anybody
the
can come up with a more recent date. I find that hard to believe, but I don't have any evidence against that, which is just sad on our part. I think a lot of it has to do with we usually play just in Buffalo or Detroit, where you can see Canada, so it feels like we're in Toronto.
Right. Well, Buffalo does not feel like Canada. Buffalo feels like nothing you've ever felt before.
It doesn't even feel like the United States. Buffalo just feels like the Buff.
Right.
But it's great to be back home. That's all I can say.
Fair enough.
Toronto's a great city. We play there often. I think mainly it's just that when you're touring, logistically, getting across the border always is one extra barrier that I think we probably just always would just cut off, and it certainly wasn't purposeful.
We love you just the same.
Thank you so much.
A lot of people, I think your big break, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, was opening for the Almonds in 91-ish?
For sure. That was our big first national
yeah.
really big thing. I mean, we were kind of from the Northeast, from New York City. We were doing all those colleges around there.
Right.
But we were lucky enough to meet Bill Graham's son in New York. And then through him, Bill Graham started managing us.
Right.
And he got us on tour, opening up all around the country with the Allman Brothers, which was some of our first great national exposure. We did that a few summers. And Santana as well.
Right.
So thank you, Bill Graham.
Well, yeah, I remember seeing you here opening for the Brothers. And just the longevity of the career is incredible when you think about all the bands that have come and gone and in that time. And also have had success and then have petered out. But you guys, even with your huge 94 record, which probably maybe messed you guys up a little bit.
Well, it was definitely a very different career path, because at that point, up another point, we were very much, it was us and Fish and Widespread doing our own kind of do-it-yourself thing.
Yeah.
And we were all kind of on that path. And then we got smash top 40 hits with Runaround and Hook. And I think there was definitely a culture shock at our shows. All the people from the kind of the more pop top 40 casual fan world colliding with our hardcore fans. And, you know, and it, I mean, it was such a fun ride. It's hard to say, would you rather have not had it or had it? Because we definitely, it was such a fun ride. And, you know, made a nice chunk of cash and did a lot of cool stuff. And it was what it was. We were always trying to get hits on the radio. We just never thought it would quite work out. Not to that level, not top 40. But in the end, just playing live music and to great fans is really what we always wanted to do. So once the kind of, you know, that can never last for very long.
Right.
That kind of radio, especially with a funky kind of hippie band like us. So we were quite content to just carry on doing what we were doing before all that mayhem. But, you know, we got a couple calling cards, which is cool.
Right. But I think, you know, that success could have ruined you guys in terms of,
I guess it could. Well, I mean, in
the label pressuring you to make more hits and whatever else, like.
For sure. I mean, the label at the time, A&M, was terrific. We always, they were great at working with us to make really good records. And I think part of that was making them accessible and writing well-crafted songs. And I think they helped us kind of get to four, which is something we always wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we carried that on. And yes, I mean, I think any band along the line, there's a lot of pitfalls. And, you know, to be honest, all that success and money perhaps helped Bobby, you know, end up dead. So, you know, in some ways that we kind of, you know, it definitely, but I mean, that could have happened without it. It's hard to say.
Right.
But the interesting thing is we all, us, Fish, Widespread, those were the bands that were kind of trolling the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of this, at the time they called it the neo hippie movement, turned into the jam band movement. But at the time, we were all kind of modeling ourselves off the Grateful Dead model.
Right.
And they stuck around for, you know, and kept going for years, doing touring and everything. So we were all kind of had our eye on that prize. And interestingly enough, all those bands are still around and doing quite well in all their own ways.
Right. So I guess that you, what's interesting is that DIY kind of thing that the Dead did has come back and has probably helped you for the last, that was the first 15 years. This is the last 20 years.
Unbelievably. But, 32 years anyway.
Yeah. But I'm saying that stuff, that approach, that Grateful Dead approach has come back into vogue. And now it's what you guys are doing, and it makes sense.
Well, by necessity, because the record business has completely turned on its head.
Yeah.
And there's some good aspects to that. I think there's a lot more. It's an opportunity for a great middle class of bands to
for sure
get exposure, and you know everyone can have their own like kind of little niche-y things they like, and they get exposed to a lot more. You know, back in the 90s, if you got on like top 40 and on VH1 and MTV, there's only like 50 bands in a quarter that would get music or musicians, and everyone would just go buy those records.
Right.
It was a very different industry than it is now.
I mean, totally.
There's some of that in the pop world, but people are exposed to so much more now, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, and what's amazing about it is that you know, your vision and John's vision of the Horde thing has really come into focus in the last 10 years, I would say, in a much more prominent way. Like, I think about all of these festivals that are happening, whether it's Lock-In or, you know, the stuff that happens at Telluride or whatever, Peach Fest, that's all Horde. I mean,
well, and it's interesting. I do think Horde played a nice role in propagating that here. But at the same time, Horde was kind of based off of Lollapalooza.
Fair.
And what Perry Farrell was basing Lollapalooza was off of was all those European, these big European festivals.
Right.
And then just taking it on the road. What's interesting is now that's come back around to it, it's more of a static one place events now, because touring those large, like a large thing like Horde is quite an undertaking. And I think you can service the fans a little better having a one destination place. But I think Horde played a nice part in keeping that kind of tradition going here in the state.
Totally. And I think it's helped expose a younger generation to that idea of instrumental music, improv music, and Fish, Widespread, you guys.
Dave Matthews. Yeah, we're all Horde bands. I mean, the Godfathers, the Aquarium Rescue Unit.
Right. May he rest in
peace. Spin Doctors were on Horde.
Yeah.
Great band.
See, that's a band that didn't recover from...
Not really, yeah. Exactly. No, that pop success definitely threw them for a loop.
They're together, right?
They're off and on. They do gigs, but they definitely had long stretch where they were kind of... They kind of blew up for a while.
How are you guys still? Do you guys still keep in touch with Widespread?
With Widespread,
or
not
Fish?
So much. I mean, when we see each other after the opportunity, we're old friends,
right?
And I have some of their numbers, and every now and then we'll be in touch. But
we're
still very friendly when we see each other. But we're not particularly close friends.
I know John speaks very highly of Trey, and I think they still get along. And
no, we all came from a really cool time when we were kind of the missing link there for
a
while.
Yeah. So what do you think of what's going on in the scene right now with all of these bands kind of...
It's spectacular.
Yeah.
It's kind of this hidden... with popular music, mainstream music, so electronic and looped and sampled and compressed and auto-tuned.
Yeah.
There's this whole thriving world that's completely the opposite. It's all, and I think all these bands just blow my mind. Band like Mo, which is a little older.
Yeah.
But they're kind of a generation after us.
Right.
And us and Fish. And Derek Trucks is terrific.
Umphreys
is terrific. We played a bunch of gigs with them.
Yeah.
I mean, we play with all these bands. I mean, there is a really thriving live music with real players. I mean, there's so many great guitar players all over the place.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just great to see all that and to know that we played a little part in keeping that tradition alive.
So when you're writing music now, is it, you know, the band is a little bit bigger than it was, and you're still putting out new music on a fairly
we
consistent...
We need to, yeah.
Yeah, you need to. Years,
we do, otherwise we feel like we're... Just to keep us vibrant, creatively.
Right. Creatively.
Yeah.
Because you could perform new material on the road, but is it about packaging it and doing all
well,
of that?
Well, you don't really hone... I mean, you can do that, but you don't really hone a song until you get it in the studio and you sit and you woodshed it and you work on the arrangements. And,
right.
I mean, it's just that's the opportunity to really focus the song. You know, back in the day when we didn't really have studio time, we would come up with ideas and just woodshed them. But we were playing like five nights a week in little bars in New York. So we would try all kinds of ideas because we played at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And those would slowly evolve into songs on occasion. But even then, we generally would sit down and write them. But, you know, it really takes the studio getting together and getting all these ideas together. Because when you're touring, you know, you got to put on a pretty reasonably focused show.
Right.
So you can't really experiment. I mean, it's not like we're playing a little bar to like 20 friends.
Right. It's not like the Wetlands days or the Blue Note
days. Or pre-Wetlands even. Nightingale. And,
yeah. Nightingale.
Mondo Cane and Those were all the
I remember the first growing spots. Up and visiting my aunt in New York and thinking about taking the Long Island train into town and trying to get to Nightingale on my own. And I was like, oh, I wish I could do it. And I just never had the balls to do it when I was like 14, you know?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a distance. Are you? Is it collaborative? Are you? You guys are all writing together?
Yeah, there's no rules to it. We, whoever's got, you know, we all come up with different ideas.
Yeah.
And a lot of sometimes we'll write words and lyrics. John's more of that because he's the one singing them, and we'll come up with a musical idea, and John will develop some kind of lyrics and melody over it. But it's as completely collaborative. Anyone who's got a cool idea, we'll try it out and see what comes of it.
So of the canon now, 32 years in.
Indeed.
What are some of your favorite songs to play live? Are they the old things or the newer stuff?
I mean, the new stuff is very important to keep our sets evolving.
Yeah.
You know, we're just always railing against the kind of being a legacy act where we just play the classic old hits.
Yeah.
And of course, every show we do play it. Got to play Hook and Run Around just because we don't want to be that band.
Yeah.
And that's where that pop success, I think, collides a little bit with more of our temperament of trying all these different new songs.
Right.
Because we do have to play those every night because there's a bunch of people that show up just for, you know, they want to hear those hits. So that's
right.
Totally cool. Most bands don't have that problem.
Right. It's a good problem to exactly. have, I guess.
In any case, but the new stuff, and then we'll play stuff from all through our history. But the new stuff, I think, keeps us feeling like we're growing and growing as a band. So I really enjoy playing the new stuff, sometimes more than the old stuff.
Right.
But when you play a couple new songs that, you know, people might not know as well, it makes you work a little harder, I think.
Right.
At the same time, it makes you really happy to play the older songs because they're kind of like old friends and everyone knows them and you can kind of just dig into them a little differently. So I think that's another reason playing the new stuff's important. It keeps you inspired on the old stuff.
Probably, too, it makes the newer guys in the band feel more included in what's going on, right?
I mean, at this point, it's 20 years now or 18 years of these new guys. I mean, they're very vested in this whole enterprise at this point.
Right.
You know, it's hard to believe the first Blues Traveler 1.0
was shorter than this one.
Yeah, it was 10 years, you know. 87 to 99, 12 years. And this one's been together now 18 years, this version, which is just really my brother has taken over his bass and then we added keyboards.
Keyboards, yeah, right. I got it. But when you think about those songs like Gina and Mulling It Over but anyway, I mean, those are
classics.
Classics,
30
right?
years old. It's impossible to believe that.
Yeah, it is actually. It's actually scary to think about it.
Yeah.
But you're not slowing down, right? I mean, this is as long as people will have you, you're willing to play.
I always tell people the longer I do it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
You know, we're very thankful that we get to do this as a career. It's hard to think of it as a career. I mean, people always ask me what our hobbies are. I'm like, it's kind of interesting to have hobbies when your hobby is your job.
Right.
But I mean, we love it. We've got great fans. We get to travel around. And, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to play, you know, teenager, practicing in my room by myself.
Yeah.
Kind of always dreamed of playing in like a kick-ass rock band with great players. And I get to do it every night, which is, you know, something I'm very thankful for. And as you get older and get perspective, you realize, yeah, I'm like my son who's 21. He's like, Dad, you're like dream job. You're like the things you dreamed about when you were a teenager is what you're still doing. And I'm very aware of that, thankful for it.
Yeah. And
we can still complain, but, you know, that's what life's all about, right?
Not a lot of people are going to listen, right?
No.
I guess just five of you.
Just to each other.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a complainer, but Ben is.
is there a band or bands that you're listening to now that you're digging, like, recently?
You know, I like, I kind of generally like stuff outside of rock and jam, because I get so much of that. But, Vampire Weekend, I really like them. And they're kind of jammy for poppy jammy.
They want to be jammy.
Yeah, they want to be, but they got great songwriting. Fun songwriting, great players. I really like, I like a lot of like power pop. Like I like Rihanna and all that stuff. I really like that. I like Death Cab for Cutie. I like all that stuff.
Right.
The Shins. That's not too new anymore.
No, no. But I see which way you're leaning.
Yeah, I kind of just, I really singer-songwritery stuff is generally where I lean with new music.
We've never had like a Chan solo record in all this time.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I don't really sing very much, so that'd be tricky. I do play out in Los Angeles where I live.
Oh, cool.
I play out in little funky little bars with the cool blues band, which I enjoy doing that. It's called the Louisiana Love Machine. Louisiana Love Act, excuse me.
Oh.
I want to change it to Love Machine.
Right.
I think that's cooler. Anyway, I'm only a part-time member, so I can't change
the name. Right, right,
right. But yeah, it's crossed my mind. But I live in LA, so of course I've written screenplays.
Yeah.
When I have free time, I kind of like to refresh my mind away from, you know, guitar so much. Though, you know, I'm always playing. So that project hasn't really inspired me, but who knows? Maybe someday. My kids are also, I had young kids. Now they're 15 and 21.
Yeah.
So when I would get home, it would be, I'd just go full on Mr. Mom mode.
Right.
And now as they're aging out, I got one who's not even home. He's staying up at college this summer in Vancouver. And one who's soon to be doing that. I've realized I'm going to have, you know, I'm 50 now. I'm going to have a decade of no children. I can't, Mr. Mom, I can't fall back on anymore. So I'm sure I'll come up with some more projects. Maybe it's time for the solo record.
One final question, because I saw part of Soundcheck.
Okay.
Who writes the set list?
We rotate. Big cock, tiny blow job. That's how we remember it. Big is Ben, cock is me, tiny is Tad.
Yeah.
Blow is Ben, and then job is John.
Yeah.
So big cock, tiny blow job. So we rotate around every night. A different member will write that set.
Right.
And that keeps the flavor. Everyone's got a different favorite, different kind of style. So it helps keep the sets different. And also we're lazy. So then one person doesn't have to do it all the time.
Right.
So, you know, like most things with bands, it's balancing having to do stuff with the integral joy of being a lazy musician, which every musician's lazy at heart.
Right. Thanks so much for doing this, dude.
I'd love to, and we love you, Canada. Toronto, we're going to come back again a hell of a lot sooner than we did.
Well, we'll hold you to that.
This is bullshit.
Thanks for taking the time, man. Really appreciate it. And thanks for 32 years of awesome
music.
You
rock. Thanks, man.
A lesson on the scene from one of its founders, Chan Kinchla. Have to say, going to the show brought back so many awesome memories, and I'm so glad these guys are still playing shows over 30 years later from when we first started listening to them. Sounds like we will be for a while longer. To learn more about Blues Traveler's tour schedule and other happenings, visit BluesTraveler.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to one of my favorite Blues Traveler songs. Here is Sweet Talking Hippie from November 15th, 2010.
Talking to pay, yeah. Cross your Calam floor, babe. Gonna come in and cross right now, cause you know I'm up, babe. Joe, run out. Don't you be afraid of me. You know you are what you made you be. I am what I try to be. You know I need. I could use your money,
And if you ain't got a dime, baby, we sell tickets on the hill. You know a new child, my baby, like a diamond and a ray. But set a back now, woman, and watch me do my thing.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.